Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. This week, we're going to talk about episode 2 of this season called We Are Both. And I'm Jen, and with me I have Jess, Karen, and Laura. And you can find us at Onceable, O-N-C-A-B-L-E, at hypeable.com if you want to email us. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find us on Once Upon News, and that's where Selena posts all the really fantastic Once Upon a Time news and spoilers and all kinds of great things. And so for this week's discussion, we're clearly going to discuss the latest episode, We Are Both. And there's so many amazing things that happened in this episode. I feel like this season is just punching us every time with each episode, taking us a little bit further, having always more questions and answers, which is really, really fun. So let's quickly recap this episode. We start off with Regina. It's a very Regina-centric episode, which is cool because Regina's always a really interesting character. She's got a lot of depth and a lot of different things going on with her. So we get to see her with her mom, Cora. We get to see her trying to escape Cora, essentially, and we get to see Cora's magic and how it works and how her spells come from a book. Then back in the Storybrooke world, we also see the dwarves testing the line and the barrier to see what's going on with that and if they can actually leave and live their lives outside of Storybrooke. And the answer to that is, sadly, no. So, and we also see the town kind of in chaos because they don't know what to do after the Wraith's attack. Everything's kind of closed. The town is really in a disarray. So they're trying to recoup from that. And they're all looking to Charming for answers because Charming was their leader in Fairy Tale World, or as we learned, the Enchanted Forest. And that's what they're trying to do again, is find him as their leader, even though Emma and Snow are missing. Charming is on the hunt to find a portal to rescue Snow and Emma. Regina is on a mission to get either magic back or to get Henry back. And Rumpel looks like he's trying to leave town. He looks like he's packing and trying to get out, and we're not really sure why. We don't get a lot of answers there. We do see a glimpse into Regina's past, where her and her mother are at odds, and Regina goes and finds her mother's book of spells and calls upon Rumpelstiltskin to help her. And Regina pushes her mother through a looking glass, which is kind of reminiscent of Alice in Wonderland. So it's kind of a curious thing to see. So it leads us again to believe that her mother truly is the Queen of Hearts. And then we see Charming in the real world find Jefferson and question him about the hat and a portal and how he can find them. And that doesn't work. Jefferson has no answers and kind of escapes Charming. And Regina takes back Henry with magic because she gets the book of spells from Rumpelstiltskin, and it kind of goes from there. And Regina decides at the very end of the episode, we see her realizing that she can't control Henry with magic, that it's exactly what her mother did to her and it's really not acceptable. So she lets Henry go live with Charming again. And there's kind of a very subtle truce between Charming and Regina at the moment. Then we get this one really brief flash into where Emma and Snow are with Mulan and Aurora, and they take them to what looks like a refugee camp, or as Mulan puts it, the survivors, and they're thrown into like this pit with, of all people, Cora. So it kind of comes full circle in the episode, and it's a really interesting thing going on. There's lots of complications, I think, coming our way for our favorite characters, so I'm really excited to see how it all works out. So initial reactions, guys, what did you think of the episode?
I liked that we saw a lot of different people's storylines. I mean, it was, granted, very Regina-centric, but we got a lot of people in with screen time. You know, we got the dwarves, we got Dr. Whale, we got Archie, we saw a glimpse of where August was. I felt like it was really good that they touched base with so many different people post-Wraith, just to kind of keep us going with what everybody's concern was. So I really liked that even though it was Regina-centric, we got a taste of a lot of different characters. There were very few people who were back-burnered, if at all.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that it was a very jam-packed episode, but without feeling like they were shoving too much in. Like, it felt very nicely paced, and I thought it was a really, really great episode.
I don't want to say I didn't like it, but I just felt like, I don't know, I really wanted to see what was going on with Mary Margaret and Emma in the fairy tale world, and I was kind of like hanging on that concept the whole time, and we didn't get anything until the very end, so I think I was a little let down by that. It's not that I didn't like the episode, but it just wasn't like, not a whole lot jumped out at me. It had moments that I thought were really funny and really great, but like overall, nothing like really stood out in my mind with it.
Interesting. I see we're a little diverse in our opinions this week, which is cool. And I think I understand where you're coming from about wanting to know. It's kind of like the first episode. I want to know who the dude was that got the pigeon and who sent it to him. Like, I still want to know, and it's a week later. But I think it's one of those things they're kind of going to play with it and kind of drag it out a little bit because it builds that suspense and that tension because there's so much going on in all of these scenarios. I see where you're coming from though, Karen. So do you guys have some favorite lines or tie-ins or fairy tale tie-ins in this episode?
I think I had a funny one and a serious one. The funny one was Granny walking around like commando with the crossbow. She's gone old school. She's got her crossbow and she's just like ready to go. She's like, this town's falling apart. I need protection. I just loved Granny walking around armed and dangerous. I thought that was so cool. The other thing that I liked was Charming's response to Regina. She was saying, well, if I get my magic back, then I get my son back. And he responds to her that if you need magic to get your son back, then you never really had him. And you kind of see just a glimmer of that concept affecting Regina. So those are my two favorites.
I was going to say the exact same one that you just said with Regina and Charming. I loved that line. It was absolutely perfect. And I laughed every time Henry called Charming Gramps. That was hilarious. Not grandpa, not granddad or anything. Gramps.
Karen, did you have some favorite lines?
Yeah, I liked it when Rumple was like, this is a portal to a specific annoying little world. I just really liked how he said that. But my favorite one of the episode, I think, was when Grumpy was like, it's off to work we go, when they had the pickaxes over their shoulders. I just thought that was really funny, especially coming out of his mouth. It just kind of made me laugh.
Yeah, Grumpy. Grumpy's so cool. I loved the whole bit he did about, would I have come in yelling it was terrible news if everything was all right? I love Grumpy. He is so
I totally
much fun.
Have that one written down.
He's so much fun.
I love the one, okay, I don't know if anyone caught it, but like really briefly in the beginning when the town's kind of in a panic and Charming's kind of everywhere and he's talking to the blue fairy slash nun and Dr. Will comes up. He's like, are the nuns still nuns or are they free to date? Like, really?
Yeah, like what is with him and like this neat, I mean, not for nothing, but the town was just attacked by this wraith and he's worried about hooking up with a nun? Like, I'm wondering what his deal is, that's like his personal priority right now. Like, everybody else is worried about finding missing loved ones. Their house just got knocked down by the wraith and his priority is, can the nuns date? So I'm still dying to know who he is.
I was going to say, is that a clue to his character somehow and we're totally missing it? I don't know, but I thought that was really funny. And when you guys are talking about the Regina Charming like interaction, one of my favorite lines from Regina is, I will not take childcare lessons from a man who put his daughter into a box and shipped her to Maine. Like, good point, Regina. Very good point. And one of the other ones I really liked was Rumpelstiltskin, when everyone keeps walking into the shop, even though the door says closed. And he's like, it appears when I bought that closed sign, I was just throwing my money away.
I love the way he delivers his lines. So deadpan.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes it, is that Rumpel's just like, oh, you've got to be kidding me right now. I'm just trying to pack and get out of town for mysterious reasons that I will not tell you. So let's dive right into the episode discussion, because I feel like there is an endless amount of things to discuss from this episode because there are so many different storylines kind of playing out. So the first one is testing the boundaries in Storybrooke. It's kind of the first scene we see. We have the dwarves at the line drawing straws to see what happens when you cross the line. Are you capable of leaving Storybrooke now that you know who you are? What happens to you? And I think it's really funny because the dwarves refer to themselves as the Royal Guard and that this is their duty. They have to do this. So I thought that was kind of a cool little insight into the dwarves' role in the Enchanted Forest, which we've now learned that the fairy tale land that we've been calling is actually the Enchanted Forest. So testing the boundaries, we see them, Sneezy, poor Sneezy, draws the short straw. Grumpy gives him a little chuck over the line, and then they realize that he loses his memory of who he was as Sneezy. He only becomes the human form of himself, and that's all he remembers.
It's an interesting fate, because later on, Charming talks about how David was a part of him, and there are some good parts, even to the flawed David, that you needed all your parts to be accomplished. So I think it's not totally horrible that he's that person, but to be completely whole, he needs himself back as Sneezy.
I'm curious, at least at the end, the dwarves seem to think that there will be a way to get his memories back if they get fairy dust and magic. And I wonder if that is true, if Sneezy will be able to recoup his lost memories a second time, or if this is going to be permanent.
I want to know who might actually choose to cross the line of their own free will, given that, I mean, their lives are so complicated right now, being caught between these two worlds and being stuck in Storybrooke and wanting to go back to the Enchanted Forest. I just kind of wonder if anybody's like, you know what, I can't handle this. I'm just going to cross the line and learn to live my life as a regular person.
Well, at one point at the end of this episode, they were all ready to cross the line. They didn't care anymore. They just didn't think they could handle Regina with magic. And they don't want to have to live through that again, is what it kind of seemed like, that they were all like in their little carpool ready to cross the barrier and call it a day. The other thing is, what about people like Emma and Henry and essentially August and Bay? Can they cross the lines like they could before? Because Henry could leave Storybrooke. He went and got Emma. And Emma could enter and exit Storybrooke to some extent too. So what happens to them? Can they still cross the line, or is there different rules now? Like, how does it work?
I figured that it's probably still reasonably the same for them. But the people I'm curious about too, as you, because you even saw like Gold standing there, or Rumple standing there looking at the line. It's not like he and Regina didn't always know who they were in Storybrooke. They completely knew who they were. So what happens if they cross the line? It's not like they didn't know who they were either. I mean, they were just pretending to be these other people. It's not like they really believed they were those other people.
But they still couldn't leave Storybrooke before, right? When the curse was in effect?
Right. They couldn't leave. Okay. I guess I assume they couldn't leave. I'm curious what would happen to them if they did cross over. Like, do they now believe the cover story? I don't know.
It's not very clear on whether what the if they have consequences, because we don't know if they could or couldn't leave. It's a weird thing for them because they did know who they are. So that's a really good point too. And you can see Rumple pondering it, is what I feel like. Like, can he do it? Does he know if he can do it? Will it affect him?
Yeah, he's afraid to try. I mean, that's what I feel like right now. He's like, it's like he feels like he's got too much risk to cross that line.
So this episode was highly Regina-centric. We got Regina prior to her becoming kind of evil. And then we got Regina showing her full evilness with magic and everything else. So looking at it, we have Regina's backstory where we see her trying to escape the wedding to Snow's father, trying to get away from her mother, really kind of hating her mother. And we see her push her through a looking glass with Rumple's help.
I definitely think it was the first step, you know, to on her downward spiral. It's so fascinating to me to see this version of Regina before she was evil, when she was good and she did care about people. And, you know, she even said to him, like, I don't want to hurt anybody. And now she's like, I don't care who I hurt. I'm going to get what I want. And so I just love seeing this development of her, and especially the juxtaposition with her mom and the hatred that she felt towards her mom and how her mom was towards her, and the fact that she is the exact same person. She has all those things that she hated about her mother are now within her. I really liked seeing that juxtaposition this episode of the good Regina in the Enchanted Forest and the evil Regina coming back out in Storybrooke.
I also think when we see it, we see her when she was kind of pure and very different. And even her voice, her mannerisms, everything sort of progressively changes about her, which I think is such a cool thing that Lana Perilla does to distinguish between her two characters. That it's so distinctly different, mm-hmm. and it's fantastic. But I also love the parallels of Regina in Storybrooke and her mother in the Enchanted Forest and what she was like. Because you see it, she even uses the same spell on Henry to keep him in the house, which I thought was such a cool connective thing. So you can see that she's much more like her mother than we ever maybe suspected. And I think that kind of helps Regina realize what she's done when Henry's like, I don't ever want to be like you. I don't want to make my friends love me because of magic. I thought that was such a cool way to show the parallel between Regina and her mother's relationship and how Regina's essentially become her mother.
And like you were just saying with Lana Perilla and the different mannerisms in the way she holds herself. I thought it was really cool how in that scene where she pushes her mom through the looking glass, she's still like that, you know, reserved good girl trying to do good. But then when she is trapped and then unleashes the magic for the first time to push her mom through, you see evil Regina in that moment. Like, her stature in that moment changes and then instantly reverts back.
Yeah, I love how they show that the magic is just so seductive that as much as they want it as a means to the end, once that end is accomplished, it's really so hard to give that up. And you can see, like, Regina struggling with that. I think, in a way, you even saw Rumpel struggling with that a little bit last season. I think before magic, the two of them were people who very much, like, wore their hearts on their sleeve kind of people. And now that magic has just taken them over, or they've allowed magic to take themselves over, and they've just been seduced by it, they, like, their hearts are just, like, buried. Their emotions, like, are just totally, totally buried. And you don't often see any true emotion out of them other than, like, a manipulation or an anger.
Yeah, I think it's so cool the way they demonstrate that as well. I think that's a great point, Laura. So let's talk about Regina a little bit in Storybrooke and what we saw from her, because we saw kind of the start of full-fledged evil Regina coming back with the Book of Spells, with the magic, going into basically Town Hall and terrifying everybody. And Henry realizes what's happening and he kind of sacrifices himself and says, she wants me, I'll go, I'll do it, it's fine. Because he knows in some way that she'll never really hurt him. So that's why he goes to kind of save the townspeople. Then we kind of see Regina pull back on all of that at the end of the episode and be like, wait a minute, what have I done? And I think that's a really another great moment for her, because we see something a little bit different than what we're used to seeing. So I really liked that. I really liked seeing the side of Regina where she kind of stops and realizes that this isn't right. I can't control my magic, and especially my son, if I want him to love me. So she tries to find a balance. So what did you guys think about that?
The Regina around the middle of the episode when she gets her magic back makes me really angry, because I know she's kind of twisted and a little crazy, but like, does she not see that she's exactly like her mother? I mean, like you guys said, same spell, you know, even some of the words and stuff, like when Henry says, I don't want to be like you, Regina said that to her mother too. And it's just, you know, doesn't she see the path that she's walking down? But then by the end of the episode, you kind of can't help but forgive her a little bit, because she says, I want to redeem myself. And, you know, who knows if she's going to be able to go through with that. But I really hope that she'll be able to, you know, at the very least for Henry's sake.
Yeah, I hope that she, it'll be interesting to see if she does follow along this path to redemption, or if it's just a temporary emotion that she's going with. One of my favorite moments from this whole Regina Storybrooke line was when she and Henry were sitting in Henry's room having that conversation, and he kind of called her out on everything. You know, when she was like, oh, I just had to pretend or whatever. And he was like, well, what about the way that you treated me? You didn't, like, that wasn't an accident. You know, you making me feel like I was crazy, that was intentional. That was not an accident. That was a choice that you made. And I was like, I was so glad that he stood up for himself and called himself out, and she didn't really know what to say to it.
I think that was kind of maybe her moment of realization that she became exactly what she hated in her mother. I think that's what kind of gave her pause. Because right after that, we see Charming busting in with a sword, which to me is just comical to some extent. Like, I just found it funny that he comes
in was
charging in, jeans, button-down shirt, and sword. Because, yeah.
Yeah, apparently they have an entire sheriff station, a modern sheriff station, and apparently there are no firearms. So for whatever reason, people have found medieval crossbows and swords. I mean, call me crazy, but surely there are firearms down at the police station, right?
One would imagine.
So I thought that moment, and then she just looks so resigned in that moment, and she's like, you don't have to fight me, I'm going to give him to you, Henry's going to go live with you, and you just need to keep him safe. And so it was such an interesting way for her to call a truce with Charming about everything. I thought it was just kind of I don't know. It was weird to see her behave that way. And at the same time, it was kind of really nice to see her behave that way, because there shows that there's some redeeming quality about her deep down, that there's still some humanity in her, which is not what we had seen before. I mean, this was a woman who readily killed her father to curse Snow and Charming. I mean, it's, you know, it's so very different from what we're used to seeing. So I thought that was really nice. Okay. Did you guys also catch the reference to the Wicked Witch of the West when Regina goes into Mr. Gold and she's like, I don't care if I have to turn green to get it. And we're like, So again, I feel like we're being given little hints about things that are coming, because clearly she knows of a green witch, which is, you know, not, you know, typical. Usually the most referenced green witch that I know of is from The Wizard of Oz. So I thought that was kind of a cool little reference in there as well. We're just talking about Charming and his sword. So did you guys find it interesting that absolutely everyone immediately looked to Charming to kind of be their savior and to manage the town, that he was automatically in charge? They just kind of very much reverted back to what was going on in the Enchanted Forest and in, like, who he was and why that was important. How did you guys feel about that? Is Charming up to this task?
It made sense to me. I mean, when you are in chaos, and especially, I mean, they've got to be so confused now. I mean, they have memories of their real lives, memories of their cursed lives, and everything is chaotic. They don't know who has magic, who doesn't. They've had these wraiths attacking them, and when things are crazy, you go back to what you know and what the familiar is, and they're used to Charming and Snow being able to take charge and lead them and take care of them. So it made sense to me that they would go back to Charming, and it seems like he is up to the task. He has, you know, he has his Charming roll back. He has that character back. And so it made sense. And I loved it when he was talking to them at the end and he acknowledged the fact that David was weak and not, you know, necessarily a good person, but that he can use that to fuel him and remind him of what's important and of what he doesn't want to be, and that it'll ultimately make him a stronger and better Charming.
I agree. I think he rose to the occasion. You know, he definitely had his doubts and he was practicing the speech with Henry and everything. And then finally, I think when push comes to shove, it was like, never mind the fancy speeches. Let me just speak from my heart and tell you what I know and what I don't know and why I think we're all, you know, better off banding together and doing what we have to do to survive and to go on. And I agree completely with what you just said, that he just said, look, David was weak, but he's also part of me. And I think everybody else kind of took that parallel to heart also. And that's kind of the fact that he was able to relate to the people that see him as the leader is why they listened to him, because otherwise they could have easily just mown him down.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to see Charming back. I mean, David, I know none of us really like David all that much, but it's nice to have Charming back and have him take control. I did feel bad for the guy, though. I mean, he just lost his daughter and his wife, and, like, you have the whole town asking you what to do. I mean, talk about being overwhelmed. I don't know if I could do that, so props to him.
Yeah, Charming, I mean, I liked seeing Charming in this episode because we do see that self-doubt a little bit. And I really like the part where he just acknowledges, he's like, you know, I'm not good at talking to people. That was always Snow's job. That wasn't what I did. He's like, I just went out and did things, but I didn't have to, like, rouse the troops and, like, give them a good, you know, not lecture, but a good talking to and make them all, you know, spirited and stuff. He's like, that wasn't his role ever. So I think he was finding that really challenging. And it was good to kind of see that a little bit. Because if he just went back to being the very self-assured Charming that just did everything and it worked and it was convenient, I think that would be really odd. So it's kind of nice to see the inconsistencies in Charming a little bit and to kind of see him chase after his own tail a little bit and not be sure which way to go. I like that about the character. I think it makes it more interesting that way. And what about his pact with Mr. Gold? What did you guys think about that? Because I thought that was very curious how Gold gave him something without really getting anything in return, because that's just not his style. So I thought that was a really curious kind of bargain that Gold was willing to pull, because he doesn't really get anything of great value out of it, really.
The pact was basically they just mutually agreed to stay out of each other's way, right? Or Charming got the potion and then he agreed to stay out of Gold's way. Well, that could be huge depending upon what Gold plans to do. Like if Gold, I don't know, plans to kill somebody or hurt somebody, and you just agreed not to challenge him, that could be enormous in the future, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess looking at it that way, that's possible. But I thought it was more of a mutual, you stay out of my way, I'll stay out of your way, and that's kind of it. That's kind of what it looked like. I mean, I could be wrong. I could have misinterpreted it.
That's what it seemed like to me, too. But that may not be the way Mr. Gold sees it, because his initial offer was, you stay out of my way, I give you the potion. Charming's the one who added the caveat. Whether or not Mr. Gold acknowledges that or recognizes that is yet to be seen.
Yeah, and Rumple has a way with words, so I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up twisting it in his favor a little bit more.
And I almost wonder if it has something to do with Emma further down the line, because Emma owes Gold a favor. So I'm almost wondering if that will play into where Emma has to repay this favor and Charming won't be able to interfere and do anything for her. And then we also see, I mean, the whole reason Charming went to Gold was to get a potion to find Jefferson, essentially, like a finding spell or a finding potion. And so he's very careful not to give anything away to Gold. He doesn't tell him who it's for. He doesn't tell him who he's looking for, what he has, anything. Because he's been there and he's done that and he knows it doesn't work well. So he takes the potion, dumps it on the hat, and then follows the hat to Jefferson, who sadly is trapped in a car. Luckily, Charming came along to find him and save him, because that could have been a little awkward. He must have been there for at least a day.
Did you notice what else was trapped in the car with Jefferson? Did anybody else notice all the little props surrounding Jefferson?
A white rabbit.
And the tea set, right?
And a tea set, too. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Oh, I missed the tea
set.
Yeah,
and then Charming kind of comments on the fact that that was in the car. Like, he spied that, and that's how he figured out he had a daughter and everything. I thought that was really kind of cool.
What do you guys think about Jefferson? Do you think he's holding back? Do you think he really knows? Do you think he knows if there is a portal? Can he create a portal? Because it's just one hat. Do you think he has other hats that work? Does he have a way? Is he just trying to avoid it because he wants to find his daughter? Or does he really not have a way?
I think he does. Because, I mean, remember, that was why he became the Mad Hatter, him trying to recreate his one hat to get back to his daughter. So I feel like he was being genuine and honest.
Yeah, I don't know if he has a way back or to another portal or something, but I feel like he's got to be holding something back. He must know something that can help, because he ran away. And I mean, I don't know, like, Charming was shoving him around a little bit, but I just don't see why he would have ran away like that unless he knew something that he wasn't telling him.
I'm also wondering if he's just a little bit crazy or not. Like,
that too.
You know, just, you know, because he wasn't the sanest of people before the spell was lifted, but he did clearly have glimmers of the past. I mean, I'm just wondering, how damaged is he? You know, how much does he remember or not remember? You know, is that, I really want to see him reunited with his daughter, because I think that'll make a huge difference for him mentally. But I have a feeling he's just kind of very, you know, broken mentally, and maybe that's what's going on.
Yeah, that's kind of like the same feel I got, and why I don't think that he was necessarily being dishonest, because he just seemed kind of frantic and crazed and just like at his wit's end.
I'm not sure if one of you guys said it or if I read it in a comment somewhere, but people have pointed out that, you know, the Hatter was kind of, or Jefferson was kind of always a little sane, insane. So depending on where he is, depends on who he is. Because when we saw him last in some part of Fairy Tale World, what we think is Wonderland, he was kind of crazy. So when he came into Storybrooke, the opposite of that, or something different for him, would be to be sane. So now that it's back to having your personality of when you are in Fairy Tale Land, does that make him insane again?
Good question. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. Good question. Yeah, I think that's, I think kind of like that's what I was trying to say too, is that we just don't have a keen appreciation of what his mental state is. You know, I think he would absolutely want to help Charming, because that would only lead to potentially finding his own daughter, and Charming would help him. But I just don't know that mentally he knows literally which end is up right now.
So what do you guys think? We talked about Mr. Gold a little bit earlier with his pact with Charming, and Charming brings up to Gold that you can't cross the line, because if you cross the line, you forget who you are. You become the permanent kind of our world version of yourself, and you forget everything that made you part of Fairy Tale World, land, enchanted forest, what have you. There's so many things to call it. And that totally freaks out Gold, because when Charmaine walks in and when Regina walks in, we see Gold packing. And the one thing I noticed he was packing a ton of different maps to basically New England. I saw like New Hampshire and Massachusetts. And so what is he looking for, first of all, that he has to leave Storybrooke to do it?
His son, maybe?
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, it's the only thing, I think, it's the only thing outside of Belle that really, truly, I think, means anything to him. I mean, he's got everything else. Anything else materialistically, he has it. So what would evoke that kind of visceral? I mean, it's the only time we've actually seen him angry and lose it. I mean, he totally emotionally lost it with that news. So I think it's got to be his son, because nothing else affects him like that.
And then to see him at the end, just sitting there at the line, staring at it. It was kind of really powerful in a way, because just there's something that draws him so much to leave Storybrooke, but he knows if he crosses the line, he loses the magic and everything. So is it enough of a pull? Because will he remember it all anyway, what he wanted to leave for in the first place? So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where that goes and how that plays out for him, because I feel like that's going to be kind of a much bigger part of his story arc as we move forward. And who he is as a character as we move forward, because it was such an emotional response to everything.
I think it may be cool to see if we ever do see Gold or Regina literally cross the line, because to me it's almost like a sign that you're willing to give up your magic. Maybe that's what it is. If you go over that line, you don't have magic, and magic means so much to both of them. Wondering if it ever will get to the point that what is on the other side of that line will mean more to them than magic, that they'll just give it up. And maybe that's, I feel like that's going to be what redeems both Gold and Regina, is the willingness to say that magic is not the most important thing in their lives.
So then, coming to our next point of very curious, we see August. Yay! But he's completely wooden, even though he can blink. So he's wooden and alive. And then we see that for like 2 seconds. Because it's
really
again
creepy blue eyes, by the way. Did anybody else think those yes. eyes were like the creep? It's like they borrowed them from like the walking, the ghost people from Game of Thrones. They had the same blue eyes. I was like, oh,
so
my
true.
God, it's the same
oh
color blue. Freaked me out.
Oh, Pinocchio
love
with
it.
Eyes. Who doesn't love that? So we see him as the wooden man, because he's not a boy anymore, kids, as the wooden man in bed. And then we see Henry tell Geppetto, I know where your son is. This is where he is. And Geppetto gets there, and there's no August. What happened? How does this work?
I just don't see him walking around. To me, like, somebody carted him off. But, I mean, not for nothing. That's got to be big and heavy and kind of obvious.
Yeah, if he were walking around, I think somebody might notice.
Excuse me as I take my 6-foot wooden figure down the street. I mean, it's got to stand out.
Well, he can blink, so I'm thinking that maybe when the curse broke, he slowly is becoming a regular person. And as far as, you know, where he went, maybe he went to rendezvous with the guy who got the pigeon note thing, and maybe he sent it or something, and now they're going to meet up and figure out what to do next.
Oh, that's going to go really well. The wooden figure walking down like New York City streets, because that's strange even by New York standards.
Well, here's the thing, though. What we see is him in bed exactly the way he was before the curse broke. So I don't think he's been able to go get himself a pigeon and send it off. Like, I just don't see that. So, I mean, I don't know. It's really strange.
I mean,
so I don't know if someone came in and got it. Did Jefferson come get him? Like, who knows? Jefferson's got up to all kinds of tricks. It could have been him. Like, it's just so odd.
I mean, I'm assuming that the second Geppetto finds him, we have another segment of true love's kiss, and he's saved. But as you said, it's the matter of him locating him first.
But see, Pinocchio isn't cursed to be a boy. Or to be wooden. He was wooden. And the blue fairy made him human. And the reason he went back to being wooden was because he didn't take care of Emma the way he was supposed to. He failed. So he doesn't get the privilege of being human anymore. Does that make sense? So I don't think it's something true love can fix.
Although he was sorry for it and came back. So the question is maybe does that make... Because it sounded like to him that if Emma believed in time, he'd be saved. And he certainly tried. It's just, did, you know, time running out on him.
When he was originally a wooden boy, he could move around and, you know, he could walk and talk and dance and do whatever. And it at least appears that when he turned into a wooden man, he could not move. Like, it's interesting that he would revert back into, like, the original wooden state before he was magically animated.
Yeah, it's one of those looming questions that we probably won't have an answer to for another 4 episodes. Because that's what they seem to... They like to drop in these little, oh, well, you know he's alive, but that's all you get to know for the next 3 weeks. Have fun with that. Like, I feel like that's what they do. They're very... They like torturing their fans, I think. That's what I've decided. Okay, so August still wouldn't have no idea where he went or who took him. So one more mystery to add to our very long list of mysteries. And then we get, again, a very, very small glimpse back into the enchanted forest, I guess, maybe is what we'll call it. Or some part of Fairy Tale World with Mulan, Aurora, Snow, and Emma. And we see that Mulan, as we knew at the end of the last episode, is really not happy about losing the prince and blames Snow and Emma. So she's treating them like prisoners and has them tied up and is leading them behind her horse into this. Emma mentions it as a refugee camp. Mulan is very unhappy about that term and calls it a survivors. They're the survivors, or that's how she refers to them. So it's a really interesting thing to see. And they're very much being treated like prisoners. So at some point, I think that will change, but the reasons why or how that changes is still kind of left up for us to find out. It's not really apparent what's going to happen next. So what did you guys think about Mulan's treatment of Snow and Emma?
I think part of it is even how they're dressed. I mean, they're dressed very modern. I mean, obviously in what would have been 21st century street clothes, and they're thrown back into this land. I mean, they've got to look to them like a space alien would to us. You know, just with the style of dress and everything. So I think on a certain level, it's a really easy way for her to treat them as, you know, these are beings, these are outsiders who don't matter and don't have feelings because they look so very different.
I'm curious if anybody will recognize Snow as Snow because she looks very different. She has short hair and everything, but I'm wondering if any of them, you know, knew Snow and if they will eventually recognize that she is indeed Snow.
I was just going to ask that same thing.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, because Aurora is a princess, Snow is a princess, and maybe I'm just pulling from like the Disney files here, but weren't they like friends somewhere along the line? I mean, you would think that maybe they would know each other.
Well, we know like Cinderella and Snow knew each other, so you would assume right. that the others would as well.
Maybe Sleeping Beauty was still taking her nap when they had that big ball, because there's a bunch of... There are a bunch of princesses at that particular ball that we saw with Cinderella and everybody. So it's odd that, you know, Aurora wasn't there unless, like I said, she was already napping. Who knows?
Sleeping Beauty is my favorite of the Disney classic movies. I'm just really hoping that the Blue Fairy figures into this and maybe fairy dust, and that will be what kind of rescues this out in the end. So I don't know. That's something I might like to see. You know, help them out of this situation is maybe the dwarves mining for the fairy dust and the fairy can come to the rescue. I don't know.
Except if the fairy comes to the rescue, she has to find a way into that area because she's stuck in Storybrooke as a nun at the moment.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking if, you know, just some way that she could figure into it in some manner. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would be really curious. I think with previews from next week's episode and kind of seeing the different things. At one point, Snow meets Lancelot as a flashback. And if I saw the preview correctly, Lancelot is in the refugee camp. So maybe he's what makes them all realize who she is. I don't know. That was one of the connections I thought might be possible. But with all of those people in the refugee camp, who else could possibly be there? I mean, the possibilities are kind of endless, but do you think there's anyone specific that's in that refugee camp?
I mean, just visually, to me, I felt like, oh, here's where the Captain Hook thing comes in, because it's an island and the island of Lost Boys. I mean, to me, immediately, I just thought Peter Pan and the Lost Boys, that's where my mind went originally, just knowing that Captain Hook is going to figure into this at some point.
I thought maybe that where the safe haven, as they called it last episode, it could be Avalon because of the landslot connection and everything. And that seemed like it could be, you know, where it was if these like worlds have somehow collided and Avalon was behind the mists, and maybe that's why it kept them safe during those 25 years or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I was waiting for when they kind of came up to it to see what it looked like, because I'm like, please let it be a big castle-y thing so that it's Camelot. Please, please, please. It wasn't a big castle-y thing, unfortunately. But that's what I was thinking, too, because I think that would be a really cool connection, because Camelot was always, or Avalon was always these very kind of safe haven-y kind of places. So I definitely see where that connection could be made. And I think that would be a really cool way to kind of weave it into each other.
We haven't had like a Robin Hood thing yet, have we, in any of this?
No.
Because that could be kind of cool. I don't know. Like you're just saying different people popping up like Robin Hood and the Merry Men and Maid Marian. I mean, there's a whole lot you could do with that. That would be pretty cool if that any interwove in there.
With this world, there are endless options of who people could be, where the storyline could go, what comes next, because there's so many places to pull from. And it's so cool because you could always guess one thing and there are like 10 different other options that it could be. So I really enjoy that aspect of it all. And then we do know one person that's actually in this safe haven place, but she's not a guest. She's in the pit as well as Snow and Emma. We see Cora make another appearance in present day, and she is now with Snow and Emma. So this is a really interesting kind of way to have worlds collide, if you will, with Regina's mother now with Snow and Emma. So they could either work together, or they could work against Regina, or they could work against each other. There's so many ways that whole thing could play out. So what did you guys think when you saw her come out of like the shadows to talk to Snow and Emma?
I was shocked that she was there. But the thing that I kept thinking that I thought was so interesting is, okay, so what happened to Wonderland? Or, I mean, we're kind of assuming that that's where she went, but if wherever it was that she went when she went through the looking glass, because now she's in the world that was part of the Enchanted Forest, or is still, we're not really sure. So did all of these separate worlds that existed, however many there may be, somehow collapse in upon each other? And what does that mean? So what other worlds are there? What other people from different worlds could be there? And then, of course, I can't wait to see the reaction when Snow wakes up and sees her, because she should recognize her.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to bode well for Snow and Emma, because if they do decide to work with her against Regina, I just think that if they end up defeating Regina or sending her away or doing whatever to her, that Cora is just going to turn on them, because that just seems like that's the type of person she is.
I'm hoping that Snow will at least be wary of her, because does know, you know, she found out more of what happened and more like what Cora really did, that she killed Regina's love and the way that all turned out. And so she kind of knows what the real person is like. So hopefully she'll at least be wary and kind of warn Emma against her.
But she doesn't actually know that Cora's the one that killed, what's his name, the stable boy, right?
I thought, I could be wrong, I could be misremembering, but I thought Regina told her the truth of what happened when she made her eat the apple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it'll be curious to see. I forgot that Snow would recognize her. So that'll be really interesting. The only good thing about all of that is that she has no power without the book, because her magic came solely from the Book of Spells. At least that's what I get out of this episode, that she had limited power without having the book in her possession to some extent.
Yeah, I think that's got to be true, because if for no other reason, why is she staying in the pit? I mean, it doesn't seem to me like she is the kind of person who would stand for being caged in that environment. I mean, she looks pretty disheveled and everything else. I mean, if she had any semblance of her magic, she would be running the joint. She wouldn't be locked into that hovel.
So that basically is the end of the episode. We see, you know, the lovely Cora trapped in the pit with everyone else. So the next episode is called The Lady of the Lake, which may kind of give us some clues as to what this safe haven is, which I think was a really good point that you had brought up, Jess, about it maybe being Avalon. And in there's some brief episode descriptions out for the next ones, and plus what we saw in the preview trailer at the end of this episode. We see Mulan, Aurora, and Lancelot will aid Emma and Snow in their quest to get back Storybrooke. We kind of see them all working together, not in the preview trailer, but in a release that was online, is the arrival of Captain Hook, which I am super excited about. I can't wait to see how he kind of plays into everything. And we also heard that Henry tries to convince Jefferson to help Charming. So Henry somehow locates Jefferson and is trying to convince him that he should help them find a portal. And then there are flashbacks that highlight Snow and Charming's love story, including Snow being poisoned by King George and Charming seeking the Lady of the Lake to help him save Snow again. I mean, really, how many times can one girl get poisoned? I'm curious. So what do you guys think about next week's episode and with the details that we have, some of the things that might be coming? Anything that kind of like sparked an idea in your mind? Any crazy predictions?
Not so much a prediction, but my favorite part was knowing they're ogres and Snow going, "Ogres, run!" I just like that part a lot.
Yeah, that's my favorite part too.
Okay. No one's got any predictions, which is weird. We usually have some crack theory to throw out there. So with no predictions, we're going to move forward into our listener feedback. And you guys had some really great ideas and feedback this week. It was amazing. I read through a bunch of stuff and you guys just, I'm always amazed what people come up with. So we're going to start with listener feedback from our email. So Jess, do you want to read the first one from Isabel?
Sure. Isabel said, "I've got a crack theory for you. So we know that Lancelot is coming onto the scene later this season and that he'll have some kind of relationship with Snow. We also know that whilst Charming is now a prince, he came from a pretty impoverished background. For me, the aspect of Charming's backstory seems to draw some parallels with Arthurian legend. Taking into account the potential for a Charming-Snow-Lancelot love triangle, do you think it's possible that Charming's real name is Arthur and that he is the Arthur of legend?" I find this theory fascinating, and I actually think it's interesting since we know that Charming is going to seek out the Lady of the Lake, and I'm curious like what she would give him to help him combat poison, but you know, the Lady of the Lake, there's one of the most famous images from Arthurian legend is her sticking her hand out of the lake with the sword Excalibur, and of course, as we know, again, from this episode, Charming wields swords. And it would be interesting if he actually had Excalibur or something. And that, like, I don't know. I think this is a really cool theory.
I kind of like that about Arthur being his actual name.
Yeah, I do too. I'm all for whenever they mash up fairy tales. I think they always really come off flawlessly. And it's always really interesting to see characters that normally wouldn't interact with each other become friends or, you know, be aware of each other at least. So, yeah, this is a great theory.
And I, of course, love it, too, because I love the Arthurian legend and anything to do with that.
I thought it was a really cool theory as well. And I just love, because we've determined that characters in this world can have multiple connections to the stories that we all know and love. They overlap, so, you know, Rumple and the Beast, and so many things overlap, that it's quite possible that that Charming and Arthur can overlap. And again, the sword and everything else, I think it's a really cool idea. And it would be interesting to see if that plays into it, because we also know, according to this, that there's some connection between Snow and Lancelot. And with Charming being Arthur, we know from Arthurian legend that Lancelot and Guinevere, if you will, kind of had a thing. And that kind of brings down the whole of Camelot, if I remember my legends correctly. And yeah. So that, I think, is really interesting to kind of have all of that wrapped up in it as well. Laura, do you want to do the next one?
Our next listener feedback is from Cynthia, and she says, "Just a quick question. I noticed that no one mentioned it in the last podcast, so I'm not sure if it's just me, but did anyone else catch Regina not recognizing who Jefferson was? It was in the scene where Emma saw Regina with the hat, and she says, 'That's Jefferson's hat.' And Regina says, 'Who's Jefferson?' with true consternation on her face. What did you think about that? Also, I had entirely forgotten about this, but if Fairy Tale Land is a completely different world, why do you think Regina's fun room of human hearts and Snow White's glass coffin is underground in Storybrooke? If you remember the episode when the huntsman dies, Regina goes into her father's crypts and goes down these hidden stairs to a room that pretty much looks like where banks keep their safety deposit boxes. As for the glass coffin, it was in the episode with the mini earthquake where Henry insists on going into the tunnel, and at the end of the episode, Regina picks up some glass on the ground and drops it through a grating on the floor. We follow the piece of glass as it falls to the bottom, where Snow White's coffin is very Da Vinci Code-like, where it's all illuminated by some light from above. I did not notice that Regina was at all confused with Jefferson. That one totally slipped by me at all. I don't know if it slipped by anybody else, but that totally slipped my notice.
I remember her saying, "Who's Jefferson?" But for some reason, I felt like it was an act. I don't remember why. I just remember that being my initial reaction to it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'd have to rewatch the scene to really kind of remember how she said it. But yeah, I kind of had that feeling too, Jess.
I do like the second half of what she's saying about, you know, things being down underground, like the hearts. You go down the cellar to get to the hearts. It was the mine that blew up. And now we have the dwarves going off to go dig. Like, I do feel like there is definitely something to maybe the passage being underground or beneath them. I totally feel that there's something to that. I just don't know how it's going to work. But I definitely feel like going down is a way to connect in some manner.
They had to go down to reach Dragon Maleficent.
Right. And in that same scene where Maleficent is, you can see the coffin again.
Oh,
like
I didn't
in the backdrop.
That.
Yeah, I'm almost positive you can see the coffin then as well.
Well, I'm also thinking Gold also used the, like, drop something down the well. I mean, it does seem like the way to get to this other land is going, like, down in some fashion, so.
Very interesting. I like it. Let's see. Karen, do you want to read the next one?
Blue says, "I was wondering, what would happen if Henry crossed the border? He has no memories of fairy tale land to lose. I'm also pretty sure Cora is the Queen of Hearts. Since she went through the looking glass, it explains how Regina knows Jefferson. And that person who was revealed at the end of the episode, I wonder how Emma will react to his or her backstory. After all, they have a common enemy."
So, do we have any thoughts about Henry crossing the border? I definitely see where this comment is coming from. He doesn't have anything to lose, except he was the only one that believed. So I'm wondering if it would take away his belief in magic if he crossed.
I don't know. I just feel like the people who could cross before can still cross. Maybe that's too easy. I don't know. But that was just kind of my initial reaction, thought, assumption.
I feel like he's the only person who's sort of purely of this world in that. You know, obviously, you know, Emma was from the other world, and it's still debatable as to who Henry's father is, but he was very much born in this world outside of Storybrooke. So I feel like the curse doesn't pertain to him. So I feel like he could do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, that makes sense too. So how do you think Emma, and we talked about this a little bit before, how do you think Emma will react when she figures out who Cora is?
I don't know that Emma has enough backstory on Cora. I wonder even if Snow does. Like, I'm sure Snow will know, obviously, the part about how she lied to her in that little circumstance, but I don't know if she's going to know how completely manipulative she was on Regina's entire life, so I'm not really sure how they're going to react to her in general.
It's going to be a very curious interaction, I think. It'll be interesting to see. So this brings us to a comment from Catherine, and she says, "Did anyone feel like there was a hole where Belle should have been? The episode was fantastic without her, but if Rumble is supposed to be trying to redeem himself, then shouldn't Belle have come running when he started smashing things? I was a bit confused, particularly after Regina said the rather pointed line, 'Your pleases have lost their punch.' And it was kind of odd that we didn't see Belle at all during this episode. Did anyone else kind of feel like it was strange that she wasn't around or that she didn't come when Rumple was having his kind of mini tantrum?
Honestly, yeah, I didn't really even like pay attention to the fact that she wasn't in the episode.
Oops, that's what happens when there's so many characters.
Yeah, I think it is a good point though. Like she so clearly came back last episode and was like, "I'm going to stay here because you need me." So it is somewhat odd that she's not there.
Yeah, I was definitely wondering where she was and everything, especially when he was packing up the maps and stuff, because if he is looking for his son, you would think he'd take Belle with him, right?
And plus, we didn't see her in town anywhere either. Like, we didn't see her trying to help clean up. We didn't see her trying to help do anything, which is something she would typically be a part of. I mean, that just seems to be, like, who she is. So it was really odd not to see her in any of the scenes this episode.
Yeah, I may not have noticed it, but once it was pointed out to me, I was like, oh, yeah, that is weird that she wasn't there.
To see what happens if we see her next episode at all, or if she's kind of missing from Storybrooke at the moment, which would lead to even more questions that I can't even imagine right now. And our last listener feedback is from Ravenclawborn, and it says, "The race is on. Who will redeem themselves first, Regina or Rumpel? Seriously, though, with all of our villains trying to be good, who is the real baddie going to be this season?" So who do you guys think? There are lots of choices coming our way, I think, with some of the new characters coming in and some of the different things going on. There are endless options of evil, I think, that we could choose from. So who do you guys think is going to be the big villain this season?
I think it's got to be Cora. I mean, I think she's going to find a way out somehow and maybe hitch a ride back with Emma and Snow. And once she gets back there, it's definitely going to be between Regina and Cora. I think there's going to be a showdown. But the first part of that question is really interesting, too, because, you know, who's going to redeem themselves first, Regina or Rumpel? I'm kind of leaning toward Regina because I feel like with Rumpel, he has Belle, but Belle's not going to stick around forever for him, especially if he keeps making the same mistakes over and over again. But Regina has Henry, and as much as, you know, she's probably messed up his life, I don't think he's going to give up on her that easily, and she really wants to redeem herself in his eyes, and I feel like she's making more of an effort than Rumpelstiltskin is. So if I had to choose, I'd go with Regina.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, Karen. And one thing that I think is interesting is if Cora does somehow get into Storybrooke, they made the big show of showing Regina not like thinking about burning the book of spells and not burning it and locking it away. So if Cora does get there, she could get her hands on that book and she could have her magic back, which would just cause all kinds of chaos and craziness.
Yeah, I think that'd be a really interesting thing to see. Because I realized that Regina's going to burn the book, yes! And I'm like, oh, she's not going to burn the book. This is never, ever good. When you don't destroy the thing that makes you evil, it always comes back to bite you. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you guys, too. I feel like Cora is definitely going to be the big major villain. And I think maybe even it's going to be a bit of, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend situation happening again, where people are going to unite who would not normally unite to maybe defeat Cora. But I do feel I'm opposite. I feel like maybe Rumpel might redeem himself before Regina, because I feel like when they were in Storybrooke and under the curse, Regina essentially did have what she wanted. She had Henry. She had somebody who, like, she thought was loving her and she was going to get to love. But Rumpel's had all this time without his son, and I feel like Rumpel might be willing to give up things more because he's lived for so long without what he wanted, that maybe that might make him want to give up his magic more quickly than Regina. Like, at the end of the episode, I felt like the person who was more wounded and maybe more ready to make the change was Rumpelstiltskin. And I don't feel like when he was standing there that it wasn't like, oh, I'll give up my, if I cross this, I'll give up my magic and that's no good. I think his problem was, is if I cross this line, I don't know what's going to happen and I maybe will never be able to find my son. I feel like that's what was holding him back, not the question that his magic might disappear.
It's all very interesting. So I think maybe this will be our poll question this week, because I think it's a really good one. And then besides Cora and Rumpel and Regina being the villain of the season, I think we also have the option of, like, Captain Hook and a couple other people maybe coming in to be the bad guy. So I think that'll be a really interesting poll question. Do you guys think that's a good one?
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Excellent. And speaking of poll questions, last week's poll question about who sent the pigeon to the mystery man, You guys overwhelmingly voted that we need to bring the pigeon in for questioning, so we'll get right on that.
I love it.
Coming in second and a close third were Jefferson and August. So we're going to hunt down that pigeon and see what we can do about questioning him. And then this week's, again, will be about who will be the villain for this season, which I think is a really interesting question. So thank you, Ravenclawborn, for bringing that up, because I think it's great. And that kind of brings us to the end of this week's episode. We talked about a lot of different things. There's so many things going on in Storybrooke and in Fairy Tale World. I'm really excited about next week's episode to see what more secrets get revealed, or ultimately what more questions they leave us with, because I think that's their goal for like the first half of the season, is to make us ask like 5 billion questions and never really giving us any answers. And then, you know, maybe in the end there'll be some payoff. We'll have to wait and see. So thank you guys for listening. And again, you can reach us by sending us your feedback, questions, comments. We'd love to hear from you guys. You can reach us at Onceable, Onceable, at Hypeable, Hypable.com. You can follow us at Twitter at Once Upon News, and you can leave comments on either the podcast post or any of the Once Upon a Time news posts. We always go through all of those to pull different comments and get your feedback, and we love hearing from you guys. You guys can also find the show on iTunes. You know, feel free, if you guys like us or whatever, to leave a comment or rate us over there, so we know how you guys are feeling about the podcast. And thank you guys for listening. And I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
I'm Jessica.
And I'm Karen.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.